This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% off of your purchase.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ohio Huntsman Podcast. And today's episode is kind of a BS session. Jake, Jeff, and I kind of catching up on things. It's been a while since we had hung out in person and talked to each other. So wide-ranging topic in this one, or topics in this one, just kind of a conversation between the three of us. So, you know, everything from updates on how Jacob's new house build is going to a way I discovered to hang a cheap and easy way I discovered to hang Euro mounts, and even some updates Jeff got from the ODNR on some questions he had and some questions he had seen from people online about some of the different controlled hunt opportunities and things like that. So lots of stuff in this one. Hopefully it's an enjoyable conversation for you all to listen to. Before we get into that conversation, though, I want to talk about our sponsor, Monster Whitetail Grub. Monster Whitetail Grub is a deer feed company, and they make a good product. We've been using it for a long time now. It's a great tool to get deer in front of your cameras. It's a great tool for getting deer in front of your stand. So check them out. They've got their signature Monster Whitetail Grub feed that they're kind of known for. It's more of a coarse feed, so the deer don't consume it quite as quick. It's got mineral mixed in, so they keep coming back even after the physical feed is gone, because that mineral has worked down into the dirt. So lots of good options or lots of good benefits to that feed. They've also got flavored corn and just straight mineral. So lots of good things offered there. Check them out. Go to ohiohuntsman.com/sponsors, and there you'll find a link to get in touch with them. There may be a retail location near you where you can just go pick some up, or you can order it direct from Monster Whitetail Grub. So with that, let's get into the conversation. Welcome to the Ohio Huntsman Podcast, where three brothers, Jason, Jacob, and Jeff, discuss all things hunting in Ohio. Our goal is to be your source for accurate and reliable hunting news and conservation issues in the great state of Ohio, as well as some fun and interesting conversations along the way. This is the Ohio Huntsman Podcast.
Are you listening?
All right, guys. So hopefully things are going well. I don't know if you guys got a bunch of rain at your house today, but I woke up to flood warnings this morning, and it didn't rain. And then here this afternoon, we got a bunch of rain in short order. So I don't know what it did where you guys are at, but
yeah, we got most of our rain yesterday. It rained all day yesterday.
Yeah.
And
we're not that far from each other, but this time of year, right, you get these like pockets, right, where like,
yeah,
you could be 10 minutes away and be like, no, we didn't get any rain. And you're like, oh, we got 3 inches of rain, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know what it is, but it seems like my weather is very different, you know, rain wise, precipitation wise, than your weather and, you know, things your way.
Yeah.
Because I'll get rain at work, you know, it'll pour at work all day, and I'll come home, which is not a far drive, you know, it's a 17, you know, probably somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes drive, and you know, Amber will be like, yeah, no, we didn't get any rain today.
Yeah. weird like that, I guess, especially this time of year, right? These, like, you know, summer rainstorms, you know, you get these clusters of thunderstorms or something where you get a ton of rain and no rain. Oh, one thing I want to mention on here, I showed you guys this, I sent you pictures, but for listeners, I can't take credit for this. I saw it, cruising around YouTube, I saw a video about this, but for hanging Euro mounts, if you're there's lots of commercially available stuff out there. I think it's like Skull Hookers and HME, and, you know, everybody's got little stamped sheet metal things or whatever for hanging Euro mounts. They can be kind of pricey. I've seen other videos on making them out of like a corner bracket, and then you put a bolt in there that goes up into the brain cavity. This one, simple, off the shelf, buy it at the hardware store. It hangs a skull at a nice angle. It's not, hanging straight down with the teeth basically against the wall. You know, it comes out of the wall on an angle. You guys saw the picture of it. But if you're looking for a quick, easy way to hang a Euro mount, buy yourself a handrail, like for your steps in your house, that bracket that bolts the handrail to the wall. It goes right up in the brain's, that brain cavity. It holds it on there. I mean, you can't position it. Some of the real nice ones, you can kind of position them left, right, however, you want to do them. But if you're just looking to get it on the wall, they're a couple bucks, $3-4. You can get them in all different kinds of finishes, brushed nickel, bronze, black, whatever matches the look you're going for. They're a couple bucks and they work really well. So that's just as a, I don't know. I saw it on YouTube and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. And sure enough, I was surprised at how quick and easy it goes up, it works well. So hopefully, maybe some listeners are looking for a way to hang Euro mounts, and maybe that helps somebody. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. I mean, that's a good tip.
Yeah. So the other thing, Jake, with your property and everything, you've been saying that you've got bunches of berries this year, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't really take credit for it. I don't do anything to help those berries along. I don't even know what to do. But yeah, I had bunches of black raspberries, which they're kind of drying themselves up by now.
Yeah.
But I got a bunch of blackberries coming in. There's already some we filled. I mean, they're 90% of them aren't ready yet, but just the 10% of them that we picked the other day, we were able to fill a pretty good sized bucket full. So
see, the weird thing is, and the reason I brought that up is, I mean, there again, we're, the weather thing, we're not that far from each other. We, obviously, I guess local moisture levels are obviously different, but my berries this year are not doing good. I mean, I don't have much in the way of black raspberries. We had one little black raspberry bush that the birds planted, and we cut the tree down. It was a bratty old blue spruce that was leaning weird, and we cut it down, had the stump ground up. I tried to dig it up and move it, but it was basically growing right next to the stump. So it was like, I couldn't get like a good shovel scoop around it. I was like hitting the stump roots, and so we'll see. I mean, it had berries on it. Maybe some of those berries will sprout next year in that spot where I moved it to, but the plant itself didn't seem to have survived the transplant. But the berries out here are not good at all. Whereas last year we had tons of berries. You know, mom and dad came out and picked berries.
Right.
And we had
yeah.
lots of blackberries. This year we've got almost none.
Yeah, that is crazy. Because like you said, it's not like we're living states apart from each other, you know. It's
right.
half hour or whatever. But yeah, we got, I'd say, more berries this year than we had last year. In terms of blackberries, for sure. Black raspberries is probably about the same. But in terms of the blackberries that are at least, you know, assuming they all go to maturity, so to speak, they look well on their way. Like, we'll have way more blackberries than we had last year.
Yeah, and I think, Jeff, you have mentioned this, where the berries grow on, like, second-year growth or something like that. So I'm wondering if it has...
Yeah, I've
something
heard that.
To do with that.
Yeah, I don't know the specifics of it. I don't know enough about it to speak on it. But yeah, I have heard that berries grow on whatever second year, whatever it is. So it has.
Yeah, I know they definitely age out. You know, like
yeah,
like first once it gets year cute, growth doesn't get it. Second year they'll start to grow, and it's not like. It's not too long where, you know, like that stem ages out and whatever grew off that stem, you know, this upcoming year is what is producing, you know, the berries.
Right. The next right. crop of.
Yeah, I probably should look into it since I have such a good kind of crop of them along the edges of my property to if there's anything I need to do in terms of cutting them back or cutting certain non-productive stems to leave room for more productive, you know, I don't know, but in order to keep it coming every year, if I have to trim them, cut them, remove dead stuff, I don't know. I'll end up hacking it and killing it. I'm sure that's usually what I do. I have no green thumb at all.
Well, I'm hoping a listener that's more versed in berry cultivation will send us right. a note, you know, on whatever Facebook or, you know, go on the contact us page of our website or something, and you know, give us a couple quick tips that we can share with the rest of the audience. But
yeah.
I just thought that was interesting. You were saying that your berries are going bonkers this year, and our berries out here are not.
Yeah, but our strawberries, we didn't have any. We don't have like mature strawberry bushes, but like my wife bought a strawberry plant, I don't know, a year or two ago, and kept it in a pot, and it went crazy that year. I planted it. It never lived. She bought another one. It did okay. And now this year she got one from a friend whose strawberries were going crazy, and it didn't grow a single strawberry.
Hmm.
So, I don't know, something with, again, local, whatever, the strawberry, at least that plant wasn't happy. It could have been from the, you know, transplant. It might go crazy next year. Who knows? But,
yeah,
we didn't hardly get a single strawberry off of it. I think the kids each got one to eat, and after that it was done.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. But we, I don't know if I talked on here about my barn gutters. I got those fixed.
I don't think you mentioned it on the show.
Yeah, we have an old 100-year-old barn on my property, and we got the roof, metal roof replaced, and new gutters put on it to keep the water away from the foundation. Because talking to people that are around old barns, they said, you know, water around the foundation will be what will destroy that barn, because the freeze thaw, it'll push all the stone in, which is what the foundation is. So we put gutters on it, and we got a big heavy rain this spring, and the water was draining out of the wrong side of the gutter. So I quickly looked at it a little closer, and they weren't exactly hung correctly. So luckily I called the people that put it in, and they came out and fixed it, no problem. But they tried to blame it on leaves in the gutter, but that's not what it was. So.
Do your gutters on that barn, do they go into, like, is it collecting the water, or is it just go out?
It's not currently collecting the water. They just go out down the hill on the far side of the barn. I may start collecting it at some point because collect a bunch of water off there. But
yeah,
at this point, they're just running off onto the ground. So
I've been thinking about adding, because we got a, it's not a 100-year-old barn. It's just a barn that was built here when that, this house was built. So it's a, I don't know, 30-year-old barn. I've been thinking about adding some sort of rainwater collection to it, because our house, I mean, you guys know, but I don't know if I mentioned it on here. Our house is on a cistern, so we collect rainwater off the roof, goes into a tank, a cistern tank, and then it's pumped into the house. Basically, from that point, it's like a well. It's pumped into the house. The water's treated, filtered, cleaned, all that stuff, and then it's, you know, flows throughout the house for consumption. But the barn just, it just goes on the ground, you know. The problem is the barn is downhill from the house slightly. So in order to use it at the house, I mean, I could just use it for, like, you know, water in the garden, stuff like that, because the garden's kind of back that way by the barn. But I'd have to rig something up for collecting water, and then, you know, probably some sort of float activated pump where it would pump the water up to the main cistern or something. It's been, you know, not a high priority. It's just been something I've been kicking around, you know?
Yeah.
But this year with the rain we've had, you know, we've had plenty of water. We haven't had to call and order water. So we've been fortunate in that regard. But I guess that's why I was asking if you're, you know, if it collects the water or anything, or if it just goes on the ground.
Yeah, it just, at this point, yeah, it just runs off on the ground. I don't know. The original gutters that were on the barn were not there when we acquired the property. I mean, all that was left was the big gutter hooks that the gutters sat in.
Right.
So I don't know if maybe at some point they collected it somewhere or did. I don't know that, but the barn had been cleaned of all of its metal. So I'm thinking someone probably took the gutters, you know, at some point. Like, inside the barn, there's an old hay, I don't even know what it's called. It's like a track that a hook ran along that you could pull the hay bales up on.
Oh, okay.
And all that had been, the track is still up there because they couldn't probably get it down, would be my guess, but everything else was gone.
Gotcha.
That was all before we got it, though. But yeah, so I don't know. We're playing the games with the county, trying to get the septic approved.
Mm.
It's playing the permit game, so that's what's holding us up right now.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah.
You didn't decide to do what the guy down by our cabin decided to do, is just build a unapproved septic tank on someone else's property. Decided to do that one.
No, we didn't go that route.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably what you should have done.
I guess
that sounds like a good idea.
Right. Just put it,
that's
on someone else's
move
property.
There.
Yeah.
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 No, I'm just every time we think we're close, something else comes up, and it's just silly stuff. Like, the latest is they wanted the gas line printed on the topographical map, even though the septic, I mean, it's on 14 acres. The gas line that runs through my property is nowhere near where my septic's going to be. But just because it's on the parcel, they have to show it, I guess. It's just silly stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just back and forth. But whatever.
So that's a gas line, like, you're not talking the gas line that runs down the road. That's like a transfer line or something that runs through the middle of your property?
Yes. Yeah. It's a main. Yeah. It's like a, it's not a gas line you can tap into. It's a bigger line that runs, yeah, basically through the middle of my property. So
you'll have gas heat, but well and septic for water.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. We'll do gas. Everything, basically. My wife likes a gas stove because that's what she's used to. So, and then, yeah, well and septic. So, I don't know.
Good deal.
Yeah, we're just hoping. We were hoping to be in by the start of school, but that's not happening. So now we're just trying to get it as soon as we can. It's going to be right in the middle of deer season, so we'll have to work.
Of course.
On it. You know how it goes, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I think the most recent date he's given us is like end of October or sometime in October. So. I don't know.
That it'd be done or?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It will be done by the middle of or end of October. So we'll see. I don't know. It's then one good thing, I guess, is that it's a relatively pressured area. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm building my house in the middle of 50 untouched acres that nobody travels through.
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot of noise and movement around all the area. So there's other houses being built in the general vicinity. So it's not something probably that's going to be totally out of the realm of the deer. So hopefully it doesn't impact it too much. I haven't run any cameras yet this year to even know what it looks like, but I'm sure they're around. There's plenty of them last year.
Jeff, is your house on a well?
No, it is not. I have city water.
Oh, okay.
In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I have, I don't know what it's called, a rural water district or something like that.
Huh. Yeah, I was going to say, you're much more rural than I am, but we're on.
Yeah.
You either got to have a well or a cistern where I'm at.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm way, way more rural than where Jacob's property is.
Yeah. So, I guess.
And I'm close to the sewer, too. Like, had they ran the sewer for just a little bit further, I'd be on sewer.
Okay.
I mean, I think the problem is they would have had the cross where they just, because that I'm assuming is a pretty big expense. You know, I don't know, but at least has some challenges associated with it. So right. They decided to stop there instead of running the sewer, you know, and they would have ran it and been able to get, I don't know, 4 or 5 more houses.
Yeah, not worth the expense.
Right.
Yeah, reason I ask is I'm assuming a well is the same way, since it's, you know, basically the same system. You need electricity to run a well pump to get water out of your well. So when you lose electric, you also lose water, which is not the case on a city water system, right? You still have water pressure. And
right.
It's a real bummer. I mean, to the point where we're considering having not this year, but at some point, maybe having a generator installed to run the pump for our water, because, like, you know, you get one flush on the toilets, you can't turn the faucet on. And, you know, if you wanted to build a fire outside or something and heat water, like, you know, because you got no power, you know, you can't. I guess you could go dip a bucket out of the cistern, but it's untreated water at that point, you know. I mean, we grew up on city water, and so this was our first experience with, like, oh, the power goes out, you lose water too. And thankfully, I know there's people that lose power, you know, big storm comes through or whatever, and like they're losing power for days or, you know, a week plus, or, you know, like, we haven't had anything like that. You know, we're talking hours tops, you know, but But yeah, when you lose power and it kills your water too, it's kind of like, man, losing power wasn't, you know, especially during the middle of the day or whatever, you know, it's like, man, well, whatever. I'll just keep flipping this light switch on, and forgetting that the power's off. And then, you know, all the switches throughout the house are in some random configuration of on and off, but you also lose water, and it's a real bummer. So Jake, you got that to look forward to.
Yeah. Have you thought, well, I guess like you said, you haven't had a ton of experience or bad experience with it, but have you looked into or thought about getting a generator to run that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I've looked briefly.
Then they're expensive.
Yeah. I mean, it's more money than we want to spend right now. You know, and it's one of those things that, like, when we first moved into this place, we had a few power outage situations, and it was like, man, we should look at getting a generator. And then, like, we went, you know, a year plus, probably, you know, storms, all kinds of craziness, never lose power, you know. And so it's like, oh, man, we're fine, you know, it's no big deal. Well, then here recently, you know, we've lost power a couple times, you know, and it's been out for a couple hours, and it's like, son of a gun, we should really get a generator. Like the, you know, the disaster preparedness side of me is like, man, we need a generator. But then, you know, you start looking into it and the cost of it, and it's like, well, maybe next year, you know. And then next year will be a year where you power's fine, we don't have any issues, everything's good, and, you know, another year will go by. And
right. Well, another thing I've heard about that too is, in a case where you don't, it's a very sporadic need for it. I've heard stories where people have a generator, but it doesn't get used for 2 years and then it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because it just hasn't been cycling and all the parts haven't been doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, power goes out and it's like, oh, generator doesn't work. There's no way to know it doesn't work until it's too late.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, I certainly
put yourself on a schedule
generator or something. You know, my plan was to have it plumbed into our propane, and I think though, you know, that all runs much more cleanly. And I mean, obviously there's still moving parts and things in there that like you said, you know, if something sits for long enough, it just doesn't like that. It needs to run and be lubricated and all that. But, you know, I don't know if there's maintenance intervals that you can run on those where you fire them up and let them do their thing every 6 months or, you know, I don't know. I haven't gone that far down the research rabbit hole yet, but that's the other thing too. Like, you know, to that point, it's like, do we just suffer through these few incidences to not have to add another to do on my, you know, on my list of, like, you know, homeowner maintenance, repair, keeping things up and working list.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, Jeff, you said you planted, was it millet?
Yeah.
Around your pond?
Japanese millet.
Japanese millet, okay.
Yeah. So, as I've mentioned before, the drain on my pond is broken. It needs to get fixed, but I don't know what the word I want to look for is, but if I'm going to put any money into getting it fixed, I want to put something nice in, something where I can control the water level, you know.
Oh, okay.
Myself, you know, I can add or remove, you know, layers and, you know, lower or raise. I mean, obviously got to wait for the rainfall to raise it, but, you know, raise or lower the water level.
So basically right now it's just a vertical culvert, like a big, you know, a 30 inch culvert or something that runs vertically, and when the water gets high enough it flows over the edge of that culvert down in and out.
Yes. And what the problem is, and where the vertical culvert goes down, it goes down to a concrete pipe.
in the bottom.
Okay.
Well, where the culvert connects to that concrete pipe, it's damaged. The seal's broken, and it was never put together correctly. I think they used scrap pieces of culvert to build it, so it has multiple connection points. Well, those connection points are worn out and broken. So what I have to do is, once the water level gets down to the base of the culvert, I have to dig muck, dirt up, and basically build a little dam around the culvert to prevent the water from going next to the culvert, going down and into that crack and out.
Gotcha.
But so because my culvert, or because the drain is broken in that way, my water level varies a lot. When there's a heavy rain, a consistent heavy rain, the water level comes up about a foot to foot and a half, maybe, and sometimes even more. But in that flood area, basically, I planted Japanese millet, where the water comes up in a heavy rain, then goes down, because it's kind of an eyesore. Because I guess I could put like landscaping stone there, but that's expensive and does nothing for any, just looks pretty. So I planted Japanese millet there so that it grows. It doesn't, as long as it gets established without getting flooded, it doesn't really mind that constant up and down of water. And hopefully this fall, I'm going to have a ton of millet in my pond attracting ducks,
I like it.
Attracting doves, attracting deer to the edge of the pond. I've been impressed, because really all I did to establish it was wait for the water level to go down, killed off what weeds were there, because there was some grasses and stuff that were able to survive in that, constant flooding, and but killed those off and spread the seed on the mud bed, and it's so far so good. We'll see what happens. I'm probably, 40 days in the growth, 40 days of growth right now.
Okay.
It's going to take probably 80, 90, 100 days of growth to reach, maturity to be releasing seed. But
I'll be curious to hear updates on that. We need to pause here real quick and talk about our sponsor, Mastin's Deer Scents. Mastin's is a deer scent company. They're also a predator scent company. So they basically have everything covered from a scent standpoint that you would need. Scent is a great tool to have in your toolkit. It's a good way to get deer to stop in front of your camera. They sell the scent drippers that you can put their liquid scent in. They also sell scented gel crystals, scented candles, like deer scented candles that you can use in their double scent stacker. So lots of good options, lots of interesting options, and as I always say, the prices are very reasonable, which I really appreciate. So check them out. Go to mastinsdeersense.com. See what they have to offer. Check out their prices. See for yourself. And order what you like. And with that, let's get back into the episode.
Yeah, I also tried to do it at our dad's place. He's got an area that lies wet throughout the whole year. But I think that area, you get just the tiniest little bit of rain and it floods, so I could never establish the seed.
Oh,
you know, because you'd get, you know, you'd get a tenth of an inch of rain. Well, there it's an inch of rain, and the seed just, you know, floats away.
Yeah.
So someone probably, you know, down river, if you will, probably has some Japanese millet growing, but it's not him.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, if this works out, you know, because it was so easy to establish, if this works out, I'll continue to do this, you know, every year here, and probably find some more places to do it.
So it needs replanted every year.
Yeah, yeah. And okay. I mean, I don't have any firsthand experience, but a lot of people say it'll reseed itself. You know, next year you'll have some because it'll reseed itself.
Right.
You know, so, you know, some people say they plant it every 2 or 3 years because, and probably my pond, you know, it wouldn't reseed as well because I have water that flows through it. But if you have a pond that doesn't actually, you know, have water flow through it, it's, you know, it only basically is losing water through evaporation.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of pond would probably reseed a lot better, you know, because the seed can't escape. It can't go anywhere. Right. It's either getting eaten or it's, you know, floating on top of the water and getting reseeded in, you know, into the mud.
Gotcha.
But also, speaking of dove hunting, both of your guys' daughters told me on the 4th of July that you guys were taking them dove hunting.
Well, that was,
I didn't know if you guys were aware of this.
Yes, that was from you.
Yeah.
Because you had mentioned, we like, hey, you know, maybe we should let the girls tag along for our dove hunt. So I told Ella after that. I said, hey, what do you think about going out to grandma's in the fall and going on a dove hunt, you know, with us, with, you know, Uncle Jacob and Uncle Jeff and Grandpa. And I said, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to be real quiet. You don't have to, you know, sit super still. And she was fired up. Loves the idea. She's been practicing her dove calls.
Yeah, because they told me without prompting, like, that is not what we were talking about. But I was driving around on the Gator at the farm, and somehow something came up, and then I think Ella was the first one to say it, but like, that we're going dove hunting this fall.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you are. But Lily also told me that her dad's taking her turkey hunting.
Yeah, I talked to her about it.
Yeah, that is, like, that is happening, and it's happening. I don't know necessarily if she said soon, but next turkey season, her dad's taking her turkey hunting.
It's been discussed that I would put her in a blind, obviously.
Yeah.
And we'd give it the old college try.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's saying a lot. I've never killed a turkey, so I don't imagine we're going to have much success. But
you thinking at the cabin or out at grandma's or?
I don't know. I didn't think of a specific place yet. The problem with down at the cabin is you have to have a blind, obviously. So you'd have to have that set up and established ahead of time,
or carry it on your back and throw it up real quick.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but you'd have to brush it in or whatever. You know what I mean? Turkey can see, so it'll be able to. Even
turkey don't care blind. About blinds.
Oh, that's good.
I don't know why, but turkey, you know, a deer will notice a blind being put up. A turkey will walk straight up to a blind that you just put up and not think twice about it. I don't know why. That does not, at least from my experience, that does not phase
them. Well, that bodes well for us then, because I need one to walk right up to it. So yeah, but she's got a lot of things she's got to do ahead of time. You know, she's never even. We didn't talk about like whether she's gonna shoot or not shoot or just be with me. I'm hoping that she's okay with just being in the blind with me and being part of it, which I think she'll be okay with, because she's never shot. I mean, she shot a 22, but she's never shot anything that could kill a turkey legally in the state of Ohio.
Yeah, I would. Mm-hmm. I would strongly push her toward just going and not shooting, because my fear would be you put her on a shotgun, and I mean, I guess unless you're going to put her on the crossbow, but
right, that would be the only option.
Yeah, I guess I could put her on the crossbow. Yeah, I told her this year I needed to get two deer with the crossbow because we ran out of deer meat, or we're not quite out, but we're pretty slim pickings. So I told her I needed to contribute more to the family. It's time she earns her keep.
I've shot a turkey with a crossbow, and it is not very satisfying. I don't know why, but shooting turkeys with a crossbow is just, you expect more to happen. You know, like a deer, you shoot a deer and that arrow whips, you know, right through it.
Right.
You shoot a turkey and it, you know, knocks the turkey around, but then the turkey runs away with your arrow in it. And, you know, it doesn't go far, because I mean it can't really, but it's like that's all that happened. Like, you know, I expected the arrow to, you know, go straight through it, but I think because the turkey's so light, you know, the turkey catches the arrow. Because I've shot one and Amber shot one, I think it was like back to back days, and it's like, oh, that's, you know, not what I expected that to happen.
With different bows or the same bow?
Same bow, same crossbow, my crossbow. Okay. And it's just...
Well, you have to get into the...
I don't know,
you have to get into the old decapitator heads.
Wow.
Yeah. You can get more excitement then. Slice their heads off.
Yeah. Gobbler guillotine.
Yeah, whatever they are.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I plan on getting Lily out more this year. She loves it, man. She tells everybody about it. We went and picked up some corn today. And it's a local farmer guy that we always pick up corn from. He has generally good pricing on it. And he's sometimes there, sometimes not, runs it on the honor system. But he was there today, and, you know, he's seen me and the kids before. So, like, we pulled up, and he said hi, and they jumped out and climbed on his bags of corn, and he's, you know, he's real nice with them. But he asked Lily, he said, you know, have you ever went hunting for deer? And she lit up, real big smile. She goes, yeah, I shot one. And he kind of looked at me like, is she telling me the truth? And I'm like, yeah, she shot her first deer last year. So he was quite impressed because his son was there. His son appeared to be, I don't know, 7, 8, somewhere in that range. And, you know, he said to him, he goes, oh, she's got you beat. So sounded like he was going to take his son out this year. He asked me, he's like, would you use a crossbow? I said, yeah, she used a crossbow. Said kind of helped that the deer aren't always the smartest, because she missed the first time and then it came back. Uh-huh. But yeah, she's always excited, tells everybody about it. So
I did that this year too. I missed one and the deer walked back. So,
well, I mean, we all know I shot one in the butt and it came back the next day. So
yeah, yeah, those
happens to the best of us.
Yeah. It's a good thing that there's smart deer out there, because we shoot all the stupid ones.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be any deer left if they were all stupid, because we shoot them.
It's kind of the running joke down at our hunting cabin. We're always like, we don't need a big one. We just need a dumb one.
Yeah.
I just need a dumb one that's going to stand there. But, yeah, like I said, so, I bought some corn because I haven't run any cameras. So I'm going to put some corn out and put a camera out and see just what's out at the property. But the farmer put corn behind my property instead of soybeans this year. So I'm guessing it'll be a little harder to get them on camera just because they'll be hanging out in the corn and basically have unlimited supply of corn. But like I think I was talking to Dad. He's like, oh, it doesn't matter. You put a pile of corn out, that's easy. They'll come for the pile of corn.
Yeah. Speaking of that, did you guys notice that the crop rotation out on our grandparents' property is off this year? Like, you know, usually it's pretty religious. You know, what was soybeans last year is corn this year. And that's not the case this year. Not entirely. Some of it is, but not all of it.
I'm guessing it might have to do with the price of corn. They probably planted as much corn as they could because the price of corn is so high. If I had to guess, they're trying to, you know, they're all out there trying to make money. That's the goal. But that would be my guess, is anywhere they could put corn, they want corn for the most part.
And I mean, it also could be a soil test. You know, the soil test said.
Right.
You know, but yeah, it's been a long time since the rotation's been adjusted at all.
Yeah. Speaking of dumb deer, so we were at the park the other day by our house, and right next to this park, it's a suburbia, you know. Right next to where this park is, there's been an empty lot. So there's house, driveway that goes back into this park. I think maybe two more houses, and then an empty lot, and then more houses continue on. And you could quite frequently drive by that empty lot and look back there, you know, as you're getting into dusk time or whatever, look back in there and see deer. Well, I don't know if it's always been who's owned it or whatever, but the park that is sort of next door to this empty lot must have bought, or maybe they always owned this lot and that's why it never got built. I don't know. It's kind of a low-lying spot. Well, anywho, recently they've added a trail in there. There's a paved asphalt trail that runs around this whole thing. There's baseball fields there. And there's one little area where this paved asphalt trail kind of goes, woods is a strong word, but like, you know, an overgrown area to where you can no longer see the baseball fields, and then it loops back around. There's playground there, whatever. They've added a trail there that kind of goes out into this empty lot and then hooks around behind these houses to the road, and you can walk into this park from the road there, basically right in the middle of this empty lot. Well, we had parked at the park, you know, and we were going on the walk. Oh, new trail. Let's walk back in here. And we walk around, and, you know, Amanda and Ella are with me, and we're walking and talking, chatting, whatever. And I said, yeah, this is, you know, kind of interesting. I said, you know, because I always would drive by here, and you could pretty religiously drive by here and look back in here and see a deer. And I'm not kidding. I no sooner finish that sentence and look to my left, and there's a deer standing there at like 15 yards looking at us. And it startled. I mean, it's so close. It startled me. You know, I was like, oh, there's a deer right there. And, you know, Ella sees it, and it stands there and looks at us for a minute, and, you know, realizes that we've seen it now and aren't just going to walk on by. And it kind of trots off a few steps. You know, we can still see it, but it's, you know, maybe 30 yards away at this point. So we keep walking down this trail to the road, hit the road, we turn around, come back, and we're looking for that deer again. It was on our left. Now that we've turned around, we're looking to our right. And all of a sudden, we hear some commotion to our left. And here come, I think it was four or five more deer that I guess we were looking to our left. And these deer, because there's, I mean, we can see a person's house. You know, I mean, it's, I don't know, maybe 30 yards of woods. And then it starts a mowed yard and there's guys, you know, person's house right there. And so there was, I think it was two does and two fawns run through there. I think all told, we saw like seven deer on this little walk, you know, and they were all easily within bow range. Could have shot them, no problem. You know, it was like, I just need those come fall.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I've always said that, though. Yeah. They always find a way to disappear or find a hole to go hide in.
Yeah.
You see deer everywhere, and then opening day rolls around, and it's like, where'd all the deer go?
Yeah.
You know, last night I had 25 deer at dusk in this field. Now it's like they somehow have a calendar and know.
Well, and the funny thing is, I was listening to a meat eater, or not a meat eater, Wired to Hunt, where, you know, he's started having what's his name, Tony Peterson, do, you know, host some of the shows. And I'm gonna blank on his name, but the dog trainer guy, he does the, like, the shed antler training and the game recovery training and stuff. He's got a YouTube channel. I'm blanking on his name. But anywho, they were talking on there, and Tony runs, he has dogs and hunts pheasants. And he said he pretty much primarily is in whitetail mode until like after gun season. Then he starts doing some pheasant hunts. And he was talking about how you wouldn't believe the number of high caliber bucks that we jump out of places where you wouldn't expect them to be. And not only that, but they're flushing like rabbits, you know, like they're so close to you when they jump up and run off that it startles you, because how did I get so close to that buck without seeing it laying in there? You know, he said there's even times where we've gone past it and it jumps up behind us and runs off, you know. And so they like, you know, like you said, they just know and react to that pressure and go places where they're not being messed with. They find little holes where people are walking right past them. I mean, because we've talked about that with doing deer drives. It's like, how could there not be a single deer in that whole hollow? You know, it's so thick, right? In there, there's got to be deer in there. You know, I wonder if we're walking past them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, I mean, you know, no way to really know, but, you know, that sort of lends credence to, you know, there's a chance you could be walking past them.
Yeah. Well, I have a doe, and I assume there's probably a fawn as well, that is living, I don't know, 30 yards from my house in my front yard. You know, I got woods there that no one goes in, especially this time of year. You know, and it's thick. It's, you know, grown up grass, and then there's, you know, a couple of trees. And just about every time I set one foot in that area, you know, if I go off the regular path, even if I walk down my driveway, you know, because it's not, they're not used to people walking down the driveway. Car going down the driveway is no big deal. But if I walk down my driveway, it comes busting out.
Yeah.
And I've kicked the thing up probably five times. And it's basically every time I set foot in, and I mean, the one time I I got close to it and it busted up out of there. And, you know, it's was so thick that I could see, you know, like the color of its hide, but couldn't tell what it was. And I thought it was the neighbor's golden retriever is what I thought it was.
Oh.
And, you know, but then I was kind of looking more and then I was like, no, is that a coyote? And then I realized, oh, no, that's a deer. Like, that's a deer there.
Yeah.
Because I have a compost. I was walking down my compost piles, what I was doing. And sometimes the neighbor's dog, you know, gets in there and, you know, eats whatever it thinks smells tasty.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought it was. But no, it was a deer.
Yeah. We only put, like, you know, compost approved stuff in our compost, but a lot of that stuff is stuff that our dog would eat, you know? And so, like, sometimes we're going outside and she's getting all excited, like, oh, a treat, you know? It's like carrots or, you know, like you cut the top off a carrot or whatever, and you're going to go toss that in the compost or whatever. And if I would let her, she would, you know, she'd eat it, but I would rather have it as compost.
Right.
But, all right. Anything else? This has been kind of a BS session, just kind of catching up on things. Anything else we need or want to cover?
I don't think so.
I made a call to the ODNR to clarify some questions about controlled hunts.
Oh, okay.
I guess people might be interested in. I don't know. It also might just anger people. I don't know. But I wanted some clarification on some stuff just to see what was going on exactly. So the first question that everyone has been having is, like, are these, there used to be a lot of hunts that were in-person drawings. Most of the state park hunts were state park archery hunts were in-person drawings. You had to show up in person, get a lottery ticket, and get drawn. And then and you would pick your spot.
Right.
And then same thing with there was a lot of waterfowl hunts that were in person. You had to show up day of the hunt and, you know, either get drawn or not drawn.
It wasn't like show up, get drawn, and then in a month come back for your hunt. It was like day of the hunt. You show a bunch of guys, gals, whoever show up, whoever gets drawn goes out to whatever their designated zone, their designated waterfowl blind, and hunts that day.
Yeah. And I mean, there was both opportunities because they had, for waterfowl, they had blind drawings, you know, for like waterfowl blinds.
Okay.
And those were, you would show up before season, you know, put in, get drawn, pick your blind, and then you, you know, had that blind for the season. So I asked, I said, you know, I know last year they went away with almost all of the in-person, if not all of the in-person drawings. And this year it seems like we're heading the same way. Are, you know, is this just because of the pandemic still, or is this the new norm? And the answer was, this is the new norm. You know, this is why, you know, this is what we're doing. We find this to be a better option. And I didn't ask about the state park bow hunts for deer, kind of the reasoning behind that, why they made those online. But for the blind drawings, one of the big reasons, or one of the reasons, was it opened up opportunity to more people. You know, you didn't have to show up on X date just for a chance to get drawn. You know, same thing with just the regular waterfowl hunt. Some of those were in the middle of the week. Well, most of, you know, half of them were the middle of the week. It was, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Right.
So you had to show up on a Tuesday or Thursday for people who work a normal job, take off work for the chance to get to go duck hunting that day. So it was to increase opportunity.
For the reason that they made the change was to increase opportunity so more people could enroll?
Yeah, that's the reason that they've continued it, is because it increases opportunities for people, you know. But the guys who were, you know, going to these midweek hunt drawings, you know, every week, you know, someone who has Tuesdays off and was going every Tuesday, obviously his opportunities are severely limited now, because now he can be drawn once, where, you know, before he was able to draw, you know, he could potentially draw every Tuesday, but he was at least, you know, his odds were to get drawn, you know, every other week, every third week, you know. So obviously those people's opportunities are greatly limited now, you know, people who are relying on it.
Well, and limits the previous system limits people that are local, right? I mean, you'd have to drive there, show up, whereas this, you can get drawn and then drive 2 hours the day of the hunt. Is that, am I understanding that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I personally, the online system is a lot better for me, because I would basically never take off a day of work for the chance to get to go duck hunting.
Right.
You know, and especially not take off where drive an hour or two for the chance, even if my odds are high, you know, even if I have, you know, 75-80% chances of getting drawn, I wouldn't do that. I mean, I'm not gonna gamble with a vacation day like that, you know. Yeah. But I guess last year the big problem was, you know, people were saying that, well, yeah, these people won these drawings, but they didn't even show up, you know, to hunt, and I would have hunted.
Oh.
You know, and the other thing that they talked about with the online system with the duck blind drawings was it's a lot easier to prevent people from what's the word I'm looking for? Subverting their system. Their intention was to make all of the duck blind drawings at the same time or so close to each other that you could only attend one drawing. But
gotcha.
People were able to either, you know, they would attend one drawing and then, you know, the next drawing was an hour and a half later. They would attend one drawing and, you know, scoot across towns, scoot across the state and be able to get into a second one. Or people would show up, get their tickets, you know, their lottery ticket, if you will, the raffle ticket, and they would give their ticket to a buddy and then go to a different one. So then their buddy had two raffle tickets.
Gotcha.
So this completely, you know, makes it so you can't do that. You can only apply for one blind drawing, and the system knows when you've applied and won't allow you to apply for more. So, but a lot of people were wondering, is this system, you know, here to stay? And according to the ODNR, yes.
This seems like it's the new normal.
This is the new norm. So love it, hate it. It's what it is. The other question that a lot of people were having was, prior to the pandemic, at least one of the controlled hunts, the one at Maggie Marsh, or maybe it was the Ottawa Wild, they're both basically the same area, but there was a controlled hunt there where the transportation to the blind on a boat was provided. You know, with, if you won the lottery, you were able, they would take you to the blind in a boat.
Okay.
Last year they didn't do that. This year they're not doing it again. So once again, people were asking, you know, is that just because of the pandemic, or is this the new norm? And this is the new norm. If you want to participate in that hunt, you have to have your own boat, your own way to get to the blind. So if you didn't have, you know, if you don't have a boat and you enjoyed that opportunity, I don't know, buy a boat or find a friend with a boat, I guess. And I never participated, so I don't know if you need a, you know, what kind of boat you need. You know, I don't know if a canoe would do, or if it's, you know, I don't know. I've never participated before, right, so I don't know what kind of boat you need, but that one's a little, I don't know, a little more disappointing, because that's just another barrier to entry for people. You know, a boat's a pretty expensive piece of hunting equipment that not everybody has.
Yeah, I mean, in that case, they're limiting opportunity. You know, the other case, I can see their argument, right? It opens up opportunity, limits opportunity for the people that were, you know, entering multiple times or would come back for, you know, but it opens it up to a lot more people. But yeah, right. I don't know. I mean, I didn't know that they were providing transportation. So like hearing that was kind of shocking to me, you know,
yeah,
that they would have ever done that. But yeah,
right. That's, and I don't know how that worked exactly. Cause yeah, that surprised me as well. Like, and I don't know if it was because I don't know why they did it in the first place, other than maybe they were trying to protect the habitat, you know, and they wanted you to go on like this very specific path to your blind and back. You know, they didn't want you just tearing through the marsh. But yeah, I don't know why they ever did it in the first place. I don't know. But the new norm is that they're not. You have to provide your own boat. So just a heads up that Both those changes are permanent changes. I mean, at least for the time being, they're planned to be permanent changes.
Right. All right. Anything else you talk to them about?
I don't think so. I just had those two questions. You know, at least those were the two things that they were able to answer. I had some more questions, but they just gave me different phone numbers to answer those questions.
Gotcha.
So,
all right.
I don't know. I might call those numbers and get the answers. I might not.
I hear you. All right. So that's it for this week. Like I said at the beginning, kind of a wide ranging sort of a BS session, catch up session between the three of us. Hopefully there was something in there that was interesting, entertaining, or that you just enjoyed listening to the conversation. As always, I want to thank you all for listening. Continue to share the podcast. That really helps us out. Share the episodes. And hopefully you have some time to get outside, enjoy the outdoors, enjoy the summer warmth, because it won't be long. And, you know, we'll all be complaining about the cold and the wet and the nasty. So with that, We'll shut it off this week, and I'll talk to everybody next week. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.